you doing?
I mean, my voice. Beep, beep, beep. What's up, revelers and weirdos? And it's another episode of Scaring Sam. We are your hosts, James.
And I'm Sam.
And this week's episode, we are discussing 2019's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, directed by, I apologise, Andre Ovredo. Yeah, fine, yeah.
I'm not even going to question it because I have no idea. You're the one that normally knows these names.
And Guillaume de Toro, Horror Goat, also produced it, and he wrote the screen story, which was then adapted by screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know this film is actually based on a short story collection from the 80s and 90s?
I do now.
Yes, Alvin Schwartz was with all these names. I think he had three collections released between 80s, early 90s, which were heavily criticised for being not appropriate for children. And the artwork that accompanied the books by Stephen Grammel was also criticised for being too nightmarish.
It depends what kind of age group you're going for, doesn't it?
Well, I guess it's like this film. It's for young adults.
Yeah, it's not appropriate for a five-year-old.
I guess this film is intentionally meant to be a gateway into horror films.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, yeah, you can kind of see that. And then later on you think, okay, they kind of crossed the line there.
Yeah, there's a blurred line, definitely. But yeah, it's one of those ones where I think it's a good kind of start to get into horror.
And it does feel like that for the most part, because you feel like, oh, you could have done more there. What's the term? The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So it's all the different components of the film, all the different short stories make the film better. But as a whole, it's missing something. It's lacking something.
But is it, to you, lacking actually something scary?
Yes.
Because it's age-appropriate.
I would say I enjoyed it again the second time I watched it this time round.
Yeah.
And you watch the trailer and they do emphasise the horror more than the actual film. And they use a different soundtrack in the trailer than they use for the entire film, which really amps up the horror. And the way they edited the trailer, you think, oh yeah, this is quite a, you know, horror-centric young adult film.
Like, that's what trailers are.
Though. Yeah, they're pushing the envelope, and then you see it and you think, yeah, it's more in line with Stranger Things. So I guess this film was probably commissioned at the height of Stranger Things. I went, let's do our own version.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I mean, it's a fine film. It's fine. I would say it's adequate. Yeah, probably a good film to watch in Halloween. So, plot-wise, it's 1968, Halloween, small-town America, and it invokes nostalgia very nicely. You've got jock bullies, drive-in cinemas, trick-or-treating, lighting paper bags filled with shit, and latchkey kids. And we're going to say this a lot, but cliché, bicycle kids.
Everybody loves a cliché.
Yes.
So, who are the characters? You've got Stella. She's the horror fan.
I'm going to sneeze.
No.
It didn't happen.
So, characters. So, the characters, you've got Stella. She's the horror fan and, you know, social outcast. And she's got her friends, Augie and Chuck. And it's their last Halloween together before they're too old to go trick-or-treating and dress up. And you have Ramon. He's kind of like the mysterious guy who comes into town. Questionable age difference between him and the other characters.
There's a slight...
Well, there's meant to be a budding romance between him and Stella. You know, outcasts who find each other. And you're like, okay, yeah, okay, man, but you're driving a car... And it's her last Halloween before she's considered too old to go trick-or-treating, so what's the age gap here?
Mm.
So there's the... Oh, another cliche. You've got the main antagonist, Tommy. He's the archetypal sadistic jock leader.
Everybody loves a cliche.
Who goes too far when he comes to, like, antagonising the characters. So obviously they've had enough of him. And that's when Chuck lights a flaming bag of dog shit. And what is he? Does it fry their car?
Is it dog shit?
Yeah, of course it is. It's not going to be human shit. Or is it? Who knows?
I thought at one point he was taking something out of a toilet.
Oh, yeah, he was, wasn't he? So he was. Okay.
Yes. It's human shit.
It's human shit. And of course, the jocks, they've got the car because I guess daddy's rich. Although later you find out Tommy lives on a farm. So I guess it's good money in this regional area as being a farmer. I don't know. But he's driving along and Chuck's sister is his girlfriend. And they throw the flaming bag of dog shit at the car. And of course, they come after him. And that's when they meet Ramon at the drive-in. And they're watching Night of the Living Dead. Because it's in the public domain. Anyone can use it in these horror films. Which they did a lot of times. And after they get rid of the jocks, they decide, hey, it's Halloween. Let's go to a haunted house. Let's go to the Barrows house.
Because that's something you just always think to do.
And it's cornered off because it's being demolished because a mall's going to be built on top of it. Because apparently a lot of kids went missing around this house. And it's all to do with the Barrows' daughter called Strange Sarah.
But can I just make one point at this part of the film? Everyone seems to know how to pick a lock.
Who's this? Ramon? Because he's the outcast. He knows how
to... It's not just him. I've forgotten her name.
Stella?
Yeah. She also does something with a knife at some point as well to pick a lock. Another one. But just suddenly everyone knows how to pick locks.
Well, it's the 60s. They had to entertain themselves somehow.
Right.
Couldn't just go on YouTube saying you have to learn these things. You have to learn to pick locks and...
I still have not gone onto YouTube to, you know, learn how to pick a lock. Even though it's probably out there available to me.
Probably is these days, yeah. So, yeah. So, Barrow's house. Strange Sarah. Allegedly, loads of kids used to go to the house and she used to tell them scary stories.
Mm. You'd ask Sarah to tell you a story and it will be the last story you ever hear.
Yes. So, of course, you go there, don't you, as a kid?
Yes, of course. Because what else is there to do? Let's go into a scary house. Let's break into a scary house.
Yeah, and it doesn't take them long to find a secret room, either.
Bleh.
Yes, I agree. So, they're in there for 5 minutes and they find the secret door where Sarah was being held, apparently.
Yes, they have to move a sliding cabinet thing away from the door, don't they? And I think that's where Stella picks the lock with a knife.
Right. And then, of course, Stella... Because Stella is an aspiring writer. We should add that part. So, of course, she finds Sarah's book. And all this is essentially... It's all filler. Because...
To get to the stories.
Yeah, because all the stories, you know, that come alive in this film are all adaptations of some of the short stories in this collection. Obviously, I guess, Guillaume de Toro's favourite stories. So they just have to find a way of connecting them all. And it does feel really like filler. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether my yawn is going to be heard.
And it does feel, what's the word I'm looking for? It just feels like generic, mediocre storytelling, you know, A to B, B to C, just to get to these stories. Oh, there's a haunted house. There's a bunch of kids venture in. They find the book. And then one of the stories happens. And then, cliche again, they do research. They go to the library. How many times
have we seen that? They become detectives.
We've seen that in what? Goonies. We've seen that in It. All these, or Stand By Me, or all these, you know, coming of age stories set in the past, nostalgic Americana. Whatever you can imagine, when you think of that, it happens in this film.
Hmm.
So it doesn't feel, that's probably the issue I have, it doesn't really feel like an organic story. Because all of it is just a reason, an excuse to get to the next story and then the next story. And
that's, so you felt it was a bit bitty?
Yeah, because
didn't really connect very well.
No, because they just have to give the characters reason to do something before the next story starts. So, of course, they're trying to solve this mystery and trying to undo the curse, but none of the stuff they do between the stories really matters. It doesn't do anything. The story's going to happen regardless. The stories are going to tell themselves and come alive regardless of what they do. So,
but I think we needed something basic between the stories, because otherwise it would be taking the emphasis of the story.
Yes, not, yes, true.
See what I mean?
Yeah, but it's just that these, you never really get a real sense of who some of these characters are. They never really fill out, because by the time you have a chance of getting some depth to who these characters are, they're just picked off one by one.
Mm.
And like I said, they just then become plot points. They just become the next victim. So you don't really particularly care about these characters, except, I guess, Stella. And maybe Ramon, because they're the last two left over. But even then, because Ramon is meant to be this mysterious character with a past he's running from, you don't really find out who he is until he's at the police station near the end.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I do see what you mean.
And Stella is meant to be just a reflection of strange Sarah. She's an outcast. She gets picked on. Her mother left. And she blames herself.
Mm.
And she hides in her stories, which strange Sarah did as well. And then you find out later on, spoilers, that Sarah is wrongly accused and she was an scapegoat for her family's misdeeds. And she was a victim as well. And her ghost is now getting revenge on the town, I guess. You can't get revenge on your family because they're dead.
Mm.
Which, now I think about it, does not make sense.
I think it's the rage.
Okay.
She has lots of rage.
So she's a rage-filled ghost who doesn't know what she's doing. She's just picking off people with her story still.
Okay.
Right. So, you don't, I mean, once you start thinking about it, it doesn't particularly work. But the fun thing is with this episode is we can break down the plot by going through the stories. And then we can decide which stories we like. So, story one. Tommy's story. Harold. Who is a scarecrow.
So before we even get to the scarecrow, though, Tommy, they're in the house and he rocks up with, Chuck's sister?
Ruth. Yes.
Yeah. Who was in the car at the time when the shit bag got thrown.
Yeah.
So they rock up at the house, the haunted house, and he decides to push Ruth in with the other kids, because she obviously stands up for her brother. and then decides to lock them in the hidden room.
Yeah, because
because, you know, you're now showing your true colours.
But they always have these jock characters who go too far.
Mm.
But they are essentially just sociopaths. I mean, what is the appeal of being the jock that sociopaths in films are drawn to? It's like, oh, he's an arsehole who's popular in his school years and he grows up to be, I don't know, working on Wall Street and becomes Bateman or something. Patrick Bateman, I don't know.
Me neither.
But his story?
But yeah, he then trashes Ramon's car, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, because they finally get out.
I don't understand what he's written on there. It says wet back.
And what does that mean?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Well, I guess if
neither of us know.
I guess Tommy is meant to be a piece of shit. I assume it's a racist slur in the 60s. Because Ramon is Mexican, I guess.
A Mexican racial slang slur. There you go.
Yep. So, yeah. Let's emphasise this piece of shit. So that when he gets his canuppance, we enjoy it.
Yes. But do we?
Well, I thought it was quite inventive, actually. And I guess this is another criticism. I seem to be criticising this film a lot, even though generally it's quite good. I mean, you've got another good cinematographer here. I think his name is Roman Osin. What is with the surnames with the people behind the camera in this film?
You can't pronounce them.
No, I cannot. But it's another gorgeous-looking film.
Mm.
And again, we're going back and forth. But in the opening crawl of the film, where you've got Ramon driving through town, you see the locations, you see all the main characters going past him conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Donovan singing Season of the Witch. It looks great. Like, I think they use this like sepia tone or a certain filter that gives it that nostalgic 60s feel. And you see all the shop fronts and everything.
And everything's kind of like oranges and browns. So you've got the autumnal feel, but also like, 60s kind of.
Well, no, it's like early. Well, it's 60s, isn't it? But it's, you know, it's Vietnam's going on. So it's got that 70s vibe as well, you know.
Yeah.
Brown.
Yeah.
Dirty and brown. You know, when America looked kind of a bit shitty. But
I mean, we had that over in the UK too.
Oh, yeah. We had lots of beige.
Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody's nostalgic for it in Britain because we just had, like, factories and terrible, terrible wallpaper. So, yeah, that works. And I can't remember what my point was. Looking good. Great film. Yes.
Visually looks
great. But the criticism I have is, like, the film is constantly trying to set up these stories and then they seem to end very abruptly.
But that's because the child dies.
Well, allegedly dies.
Or gets taken into the void.
Well, yeah, something happens to them. But Stella starts reading the book because, of course, you're going to start reading the book.
Because, of course, she's an idiot and she's taken the book out of the haunted house.
Yeah, and it's rumoured to be written in blood and it does look like it's been written in blood. But you seem to be fine with continue reading it and touching that thing. So she starts reading Harold's Fate. No, sorry, starts reading Tommy's fate.
I think the first one does say Harold, though.
Yeah, the story is Harold, because the scarecrow is Harold, but it's...
Oh, okay.
So, Tommy lives on a farm, and I think he's always been terrified of this scarecrow out in the cornfield, or wheat field, or whatever it is.
Mm.
And he has to go and collect chicken eggs or something. Yes.
Excuse me.
And...
Kitties keep me awake at night.
So he's collecting the chicken eggs and he's walking up through the cornfield. And
I don't understand. Why are these chickens laying eggs in the field?
Well, no, I guess he has to walk to the chicken pen and it's past the cornfield.
Oh, I see. They're not just like randomly laying eggs around the field. Could you imagine the task?
And you can completely understand why Tommy has always been afraid of this scarecrow because Harold looks like he's wearing a human face.
Yes.
It doesn't
I'm
look like a mask.
I'm glad you said that because otherwise I would have done.
It literally looks like something that Leatherface would wear. I try to say literally there, but it came like... So naturally, he looks back at one point, Harold's gone. And then he just keeps on appearing through the corn.
Because, yeah, like you would, the scarecrow has moved. And you wouldn't just think, shit, I'm going.
Yeah, but every time he turns down another row, he's there and he turns and then he catches up with him. And I suppose that's one way of keeping your rating down to PG-13 because Tommy gets stabbed by Harold with a pitchfork and he's not bleeding. He starts bleeding straw instead.
Yes, but I also found that quite disgusting. Because he was pulling straw out of his mouth at one point, wasn't he?
Yeah, it starts like regurgitating loads of straw.
Yeah, that's not very pleasant.
And then he turns into Harold.
Mm.
So he's a scarecrow, which now wears a jock jacket. And that's the story, that's it.
But it's one of those, and I'm going to say it, cliches, where the monster isn't very fast, but the person that the monster's chasing is a clumsy idiot and falls over things or, like, goes the wrong way or...
Yeah, and this time it's not a girl, it's just some guy. So, yeah, it works. And they do repeat that again later on. Mm. But I think it's more effective later on. So that's one story. And then, of course, the police start getting involved. And I guess because it's small town America, the police are slightly racist. And they suspect that Ramon, the newcomer in town, might be responsible because he was getting bullied by the jocks.
Well, it has connections, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they're going to see what the latest... what happened just before the incident happened. So I kind of get where they're coming from, but yeah, I also agree it's maybe not the best of choices.
But they've established he's a drifter, so it's just a convenient excuse to keep him in town, keep him in the story. And...
it's at this point that Stella returns the book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because she thinks, well, shit... I don't want to read any more stories, so I'll just put it back, because that's how it works.
But of course it turns back up again. So she can't get rid of it. Of course she can't get rid of it. And then it's Augie's story, The Big Toe.
Yes, and I would just like to note what I have written down here, because this was the story I genuinely did not like. Because all I've written is... Stella reads The Big Toe. So it's writing itself in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then all I've got, ew, he eats the toe.
Yeah, so context, there's a big stew in the fridge. Somehow Augie's parents have gone on holiday without him.
Or they're away for the night or something.
Yeah, it's just him. And he's eating a stew. He's eating it cold as well.
Yeah, but he was phoning someone... he was on the phone to someone, I'm sure it was the parents, when he finds this stew and someone questions the stew at the end of the phone.
Right.
Like, no, we haven't made a stew. Something like that. Because he's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to eat this cold stew. I don't think he even eats it up, does he?
That sounds even more disgusting than the tuck.
Oh.
So he eats the tuck.
No, I'm imagining it again now. It's actually quite...
and it's I think they do this twice as well. It's a story that was told to them as a kid by their parents that comes to life. So they conveniently know the plot of the story as it unfolds to them. So they go like a lot of exposition to them. Like, oh my God, I remember this story. There's going to be a corpse looking for his toes going to come for me. And then it happens.
Yeah, so you have Stella and...
Ramon.
Oh, is it? I thought it was the...
No, it's... yes, because he has to crash around her house again.
Oh,
because
yes, it was.
Conveniently, her dad works nights.
Yes. On the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, which I felt actually suspends tension in the scene as it unfolds, because they're going, Augie, get out of there, hide, and all this stuff. And...
sorry.
No, I know you did it, yes.
Augie.
Oi.
I said it like in my head and I was like, oh, why didn't I say it out loud? Oh, go on. Carry on.
So to me, that gets rid of all tension because they're just talking over the scene.
Yeah.
So he locks himself in a room and he hears the corpse approaching. And
This is after he actually...
yeah.
He's eaten the stew... the toe goes in his mouth, he crunches on something and takes out the toe.
Yes.
Blah.
And then he flees into
his room. And then we see a walking corpse.
Yeah, that's the problem I had, because I thought, while he's hiding in the room, you can hear it groaning outside in a dark corridor.
Mm.
Leave it like that, as long as you can, because that causes your imagination.
Yes, but we see the corpse before that.
You see it straight away.
Yeah.
And you're like, great, okay.
When he was then under the bed, so he's shut himself into his bedroom and he's under the bed, at that point, I was a little bit like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, he was freaking
because
out.
Because I was expecting some kind of jump scare. We were going to see a face or something was going to happen. And if we hadn't have seen the corpse walking around, I think even if you saw like a hand around the wall or something, that would have been okay, but not a whole walking corpse.
Yes, but you freaked out because you was wondering where it was in the room then.
Yes.
Was it under the bed? And then...
Was it on top of the bed? Yes. Was it hovering somewhere?
And then Oggy just gets dragged into the darkness under the bed. And that's
it. Then don't see the corpse again.
No. Just gone.
So...
they wasted money on that corpse.
Yeah.
So, like I said, you wondering what it looks like would be more effective.
Mm. Although, we did have... when it was like really creaky floorboards, that was creating a bit of suspense.
Yes, exactly. Because, you didn't know where it was.
No.
So that's why it works. Would you say that was your favourite story then?
Let's discuss them and then we'll come back.
Okay, before the next story sets in, Ruth... No, that's not it. Yeah, before the next story kicks in, you got... I can't remember if... is Chuck here? Chuck at this point, or is he with his sister? I can't remember, but definitely Stella and Ramon go to the former Bellows help. And another cliche, this is, they're introduced to a woman who gives them information.
Mm.
And it is the cliche of the magical black person.
Everybody loves a cliche.
It's not actually phrased that way. I don't actually want to use the correct term because I don't want to risk saying that word on a podcast.
I mean, I don't even know what word you're going to
You're
going to say, but we'll leave it at that.
It's essentially a stock character who devotes themselves to selflessly helping white characters.
Hmm.
And she's slightly a bit old and frail and senile. But she gives a lot of exposition dump about the Bellows and Sarah. And then they go off their way again to the next story.
But it turns out that she was a little girl in the house with Sarah.
Yes. And doesn't really provide a lot of information. Just, here's another little bit of nugget and then you can go on to the next story, which is Ruth's story, the Red Spot. So, what's this? This is...
Oh, Ruth is after they try and burn the book, though, isn't it? So they try and burn...
Oh, yeah, because Oggy's gone now.
Mm.
And I thought this was a really great shot in the... it's a long shot of, like, the empty drive-in where they met Ramon. And you got the characters in the foreground and they tried to set alight the book in, like, a dumpster or something. Like, one of those barrels.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can't burn the book. It's supernatural. But you just had this massive empty driveway in the background. It looked great. So, yeah, once again, another good looking horror.
Great.
Yeah.
But yes, the red spot.
Yeah, so she has a bug bite on her face, and it's supposed to be a dance recital or.
It was a musical.
Okay. And she's meant to be the leading lady, I guess, or one of the main dancers. And of course, all the other girls are like, "You got to sort your face out, love. You gotta cover that up." That was my start.
I was gonna say, I don't think it was mine.
And she basically runs to the bathroom mirror in school and starts trying to squeeze this spot, trying to burst it. And then.
And then this one little. What you think might be a hair at first just pokes itself out of the spot. And this is when I was then like, nope, no, don't like this one. Wasn't scary, it was just a bit disgusting. But it's because I don't like spiders. And what comes out of her face?
All the spiders.
All of the spiders. Every single spider you could imagine comes out of her face. I don't understand how they multiply out of her face because there wasn't that much space. But they cover the entire, like, bathroom stall where she is.
It's magic, Sam. Magic.
It's disgusting.
Rich girl magic.
Right.
See, I thought you'd have more of a reaction to that because you're scared of spiders, but not really. Just disgust.
No, just disgust.
But Ruth doesn't die. She just goes insane and get institutionalised.
Yeah, I could understand that. Yep.
And so they do more research. and they found out Sarah was institutionalized and tortured with crude medical practices, which revealed to be at the hand of her brother, I think. So I should say at this point, they go to the sanatorium, the asylum, where Sarah was taken, which I guess Ruth is taken now. And they go through all these files and they get this old tube recording device, whatever it's called. What was it?
Oh, I can't remember.
But anyway, they use that and they start... This is what I really like. They start listening to this recording of Sarah basically being interrogated, and turns out she was framed. Her family framed her. They basically tortured her, made her go insane so that she was convinced to be the one who killed these children. But it was... weren't it was her family, because they were putting mercury in the water or something? Yep. I don't know. You know, rich people problems. You know? And this is what I've... this was a nice touch. They start listening to this and Sarah's confessing, and then she starts telling Chuck's story on the recording device. Because conveniently they have to separate Chuck in the asylum.
Yes.
So that was a nice touch. I like that. That was a nice moment. And this is my favourite story, Chuck's story, The Red Room. Because when they first ventured into the haunted house, Chuck saw this red room with this old cranky woman with like a veil over her face, and she had like a Doberman.
Yeah, so he runs and hides in a cupboard, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then time slips.
Yeah.
And he sees the past.
He opens the cupboard and he sees the old lady with the veil. She then... turns to look at the cupboard. He closes the door. There's like a bang or something. And then he opens the door.
And Oggy's there.
No, someone opens the door, but then it's his friend.
Yeah. So after that, he keeps having nightmares of a red room.
Yes.
And he is basically running through the asylum, being chased by attendees.
Because he's not meant to be in this area where he is.
And they're all long...
for a very good reason.
Long, sterile, white corridors. And then they hit the alarm and all these red lights come on. So it becomes a red room. Looks great. And all of a sudden this creepy, naked, I guess, chunky woman turns up. It's meant to be a perfect depiction of the artwork in one of the books. That's how she looked exactly in the book when they had the artwork on show. But she doesn't look nothing like the old woman you saw in the red room, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
So she kind of looks like the Michelin man with like a black wig on.
With an odd smile, though. It wasn't really like a human mouth.
Well, it's like a doughy face, isn't it?
Mm.
But I thought it was a really great design. And... of course, it's like numerous corridors, so like all crossing off and going in different directions. And wherever Chuck goes, every time he turns, she's gotten closer, even though she's walking very slowly.
And like incredibly slow, like snail pace.
But every time he turns, she keeps getting closer. And then he turns, he's in like the cross, he's like a crosswalk. And he turns one way, she's there. He turns around, she's on the other side. Turns this way, and she's getting closer and closer.
And all of a sudden, she's multiplied herself, though.
Yeah, and it's pure nightmare. It's literally...
you can't outrun this.
It's literally a classic nightmare you would have as a child. Where you, no matter how quickly you run, you can't escape the monster.
No.
And then she gets so close to him, she essentially just embraces him and then slowly absorbs him into herself. And that's really disturbing. And it kind of reminded me of some Cronenberg body horror. Or what was it, 1989 Society? This horror film, which again is supposed to be picking hoes at the rich and how they live in California. And it has this really grotesque scene at the end, a classic scene. I think it's called The Shunting. Where it's like, turns out the rich are this massive, disgusting, slimy creature where they're all absorbed into one another, and you've got hands coming out of people's mouths and a face where an arsehole should be and stuff like this. And they basically, at the end, spoilers, they get the main protagonist, and they zorb him into this massive, like massive mass of body and skin against his will.
Blob.
And that's what it kind of reminded me of, but you know, a slightly tamer version. But anyway, there's Chuck. He's gone now. Been absorbed into a chunky old woman. So, because, you know, they're roaming illegally around an asylum, Stella and Ramon are locked up by the police, and this is when we discover that Ramon is a draft dodger.
Mm-hmm.
Not his real surname. He's naturally trying to avoid going to Vietnam, where he's most likely going to be killed off. And then it's his story, and this is going to be very hard to pronounce. It's Mitai Doty Walker. Obviously the name of the original story, but what the hell does that mean? Because that's not even the name of the monster, because he's in a jail cell and something's coming down the fireplace. And you think,
and the dog's staring at the fireplace.
Yeah.
And the policeman's then like investigating because he doesn't understand what the dog's doing.
Do police stations have proper old fireplaces
well,
like
this
that?
This one
yeah.
did.
Yeah. And so Ramon instantly goes, oh, it's the jangly man. They used to tell me about this when I was a kid. It used to scare me. See that? Okay. Where was the build-up for that? You never mentioned that before. And then, was it a head that drops down first? It's basically like a... all these body parts just start falling out of the fireplace. And they all merge together to become the jangly man, who's portrayed by a contortionist. I don't know his name, but I think he won American Idol or X Factor in the US.
Well, that one fact there, honestly, this was a little... it was, I say a little, it was freaky because it was moving inhuman, but at the same time, like, it didn't look like it wasn't real.
Yeah, it wasn't CGI.
No.
You can tell it was there.
But yeah, that wasn't very nice to watch.
And this is the moment where they kind of cross the line with a PG-13 part because once he forms, he snaps the policeman's neck, literally twists it right around. But it doesn't cut away. You don't just hear snap.
No, you see it.
You see it. They don't cut away from it. It's like, oh, okay. Didn't expect to see that in this PG-13 film.
Mm-hmm.
Again, but it's Ramon's story, so why did the police officer die other than the fact he was an arsehole? And somehow, oh, I guess they get the keys and they break out their jail cells, so they flee.
Well, you fail to mention why they're fleeing, because at the moment they're in a cell. How can the monster get through? Oh, it bends itself.
Yeah, it pushes way
through. But it has to literally shove its head through, and I think it gets a little bit stuck, and at that point they think, okay, we're going to run now. This is our chance.
Yeah, and the snapping noises it makes are a great effect as well. And then they insert a car chase at this moment, so Ramon's fleeing and a jangly man's chasing him. But it gets to a point where you see too much of the jangly man, where it loses effect.
Hi, Ranger.
But, you know, you amp up the action, you have a car chase, and at this time Sarah is returning to the Bellows house. I don't understand why. I've forgotten. I don't know if she worked out how to break the curse or something.
Because I think she wanted to, like, beg Sarah to stop or something.
So they split up, and then it becomes Stella's story, the haunted house, which isn't the haunted house. So this is when Stella does her best, oh my God, I can't say it.
Stella, if I knew what you were trying to say, I would try to say it.
Stella does her best Sam Beckett impression from Quantum Leap because she finds herself in the past and she looks in the mirror and she is Sarah and she's been pursued across the house by the rest of her family.
Mm-hmm.
And then being Sarah, she gets locked in the basement and then suddenly she's in the room with Sarah. So I don't understand that part. She's Stella. No, goddamn it. Stella is Sarah and then she's not because Sarah is in the room.
Yes.
Yes. And at the same time in the present, or 1968, Ramon is still being chased by the jangly man, but now he has found himself in the house as well.
And he's shouting out for Stella.
And she finds...
He finds her glasses, doesn't he?
Yes.
But they're really old and dusty and cracked and stuff because, obviously, somehow Stella has actually gone back in time.
But again, she's meant to be in her body, so why would she drop her glasses? Because when she looks in the mirror, she sees Sarah. She doesn't see herself with glasses.
Oh, I don't know. Or maybe I made that bit up.
No, you didn't. There was the glass. That's how he knew she was in the past.
Mm.
But this is when you get to the point when you think they're just trying to find a way of wrapping up the story.
Mm.
And I can't even remember how they resolve it.
Don't look at me.
I'm looking for my
notes. The next words on my notes say, it ends with hope.
I think, there we go, I've written something like Sarah persuades... No, God damn it, it's too many S-named words. Stella persuades Sarah that she's going to tell her story and tell the truth of what happened to her.
Oh, yes. And by doing so, that then breaks Sarah's rage.
Because she writes her story in the book with blood.
Yeah.
And then Sarah kind of like... lets go and like fades away and breaks the curse. And then Stella does write her story and it gets published in the local paper.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramon enlists, obviously against his will. And then Stella releases Ruth and vows to save Chuck and Uggy, which you assume, oh, okay, they're not dead then.
Well, where are they?
You don't intend to save Tommy. But you intend to save your friends.
Maybe that was just oversight.
And that's it. That's the film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were kind of thinking there was going to be a sequel or anything, but... I don't know. What's the message, Sam? Is it like females being victimised in the past and present and then they all band together with empowerment because Sarah vows to... save Sarah and her reputation, and then at the end, Sarah is the one who frees Ruth from the asylum.
I think it was just coincidence that Sarah was a writer and that character decides to save, Stella.
Yeah, see what I mean?
Yes, I do see what you mean. I just think it's because a little, and I'm not really sure what my point was. But in summary, it's too scary for kids, but not for young adults.
What is a young adult?
Like...
No, I'm genuinely asking. I don't know. When they say...
No, this is a PG-13, isn't it?
Yeah, which would have been...
What's that for us?
No, I think that is us now.
Oh.
There hasn't been a 12 over here for years.
Yeah, so like... What age is tweens?
What's a tween?
Oh, gosh. So that's between, like, 9 and 12, something like that. So anything above the 12, so we're saying PG-13. So 13 to, like, 17, like, that kind of age.
That's young adult?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought young adult would have been, like, 18 or 17 to, like, 21.
No, because then this would be a scary film.
Yeah, it'd just be a horror film.
It would be a 15 or an 18.
I suppose if that is the age demographic they're going for, then I guess it is a fine gateway horror film.
Yeah.
So it does its job then?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, yeah, maybe it tantalises them to watch other horror films because they're not going to stick to their age category. They're going to watch something that's 15 or 18.
Well, you've got to think of how rebellious you are when you're a child, when you're a teenager. Like, you're going to watch something that is not your age, aren't you? Like, I know I didn't have any choice, but when I was really young and then Chucky was on the screen, you know, that I was a lot younger than I should have been to watch that.
Well, when we used to have, like, a VHS collection on the bookshelf,
hmm.
We had Predator on there. Kind of regret, you know, getting rid of those VHSs now. Could have made a few extra dollars or pounds. Some cheddar cheese.
Could you though? I don't think anyone would buy them now.
People love buying VHS. Physical media is coming back. People are buying it, especially VHSs. They're adding them to their collection. They're not watching them, but they love them on their bookshelves. But we had the original Predator VHS, and I was like, what's that? What's that? And my mum was all like, oh, no, you don't want to watch that. That's too scary, or that's too violent. And so I always like was a bit reserved about Predator, but I was always looking at the box set. I knew who Arnold Schwarzenegger was. And then one day I just put it on, and I was like blown away because, you know, Predator is amazing.
Yeah. And yeah. And very bloody.
Yeah, exactly. But it's great. I wouldn't say it's scary. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's forbidden fruit, it just made you want to watch it more.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to branch out and watch something else. They're going to Google scary horror films. They've survived this experience. They've put them on edge, but maybe it weren't enough for them. And they want more. So...
Yes, but I think you're then going to go a big step up, aren't you?
And again, what scares kids these days? Are they going to put The Exorcist on and be absolutely terrified? Because I keep saying this, people keep saying, The Exorcist, scariest film ever. It was banned in the UK for years.
Back in the day, yes. But it was really scary for
banned.
People.
Was it banned until 1999 or somewhere around that in the UK? And then they finally released it again. And then you watch it and it's, you've seen worse now. Maybe better directed, better suspense, better build-up horror, better subject matter. But in terms of gore or violence, or doesn't even have jump scares. It has very smart jump scares when you see like Pazuzu's face. But you watch it now and it's like, it's tame. It's a tame film. So I don't even know what would scare him now. Would this even scare them now? Because they're going on TikTok now and watching people exploring allegedly haunted houses or abandoned places and getting freaked out watching that stuff. It's like watching Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity. So are they finding that more terrifying now than horror films?
Who knows?
Hmm.
I think it's all playing on what you're afraid of as a person. So, like, these stories were on each character. It was a story that they were scared of.
Yes. But does that transfer to the audience?
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
But so, obviously, I'm scared of spiders, so I didn't like that one.
But that's a universal fear, so obviously you kept that story in because...
Yes.
You thought it'd have the desired
effect.
Yeah,
but you have to branch out. You can't have all stereotypical scary stories.
Yeah, and I guess people are still afraid of scarecrows and I guess zombies and whatever the jangly man is. I guess visually they think, oh, that's a unique idea.
Yes.
That's going to be creepy.
Disgusting. Kind of reminds me a little bit like the monster thing out of The Thing, how it like shuffles.
Mm. But getting back to this idea of what is scary these days, when you got people like Blumhouse who are just exclusively churning out horror films now, it's getting to a point now where it's like junk food, because you watch these films and you find them entertaining for the most part, but you have no real desire to watch them again because most of the time they're neither scary, they're just a bit of fluff, and you go on to the next thing and the next thing.
So it's like a one-time watch film, you think.
So they did the Halloween, the last Halloween trilogy. Really liked the first installment, and then they went, that was great, that was a success. Let's turn it into a trilogy, and then the other ones are, like, fine. They're fine.
Mm.
Or that Megan film with that robot doe.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watch it again. It was entertaining, but it's not memorable. It's not going to be in anybody's favourite horror films of all time. And then they released that Exorcist Believer film, which is absolute trash. And then I think they released that Night Swim film we didn't bother watching, about a haunted swimming pool. It's just junk food. It's just, you consume it at the time, you enjoy it, you talk about it on the car ride home, and then you forget about it for a month's time.
Who knows? We might watch it at some point.
Yes.
When it's on
but
streaming.
But I'm saying, these aren't future classic films.
Mm.
It's getting to that point where it's like the 80s again. You just started churning out low-budget horror films en masse. You're basically throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
But some of those budget films then became classics.
Some. But there's a lot more which did not. some cult classics, some just forgotten in the sands of time.
Then that just generally happens with films anyway.
True, yes. So, rating? I mean, the only...
I mean, I think this is quite low, to be honest.
So, 5 out of 10?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say if you've got a teenager that, you know, wants to get into horror films, it's definitely one to start them on.
I don't know what age you would start them on, though, because like I said, they are exposed to so much on social media now. When would you get them to watch this film? 11? 10? 11? 12? Because I think by 13...
Oh, so you're going under the 13.
Yeah, because like, I think by 13, they've already seen a lot more on their phones. So I don't think this would have the desired effect.
Yeah. I get what you mean.
And that's probably... I don't think this was a successful film. I think at best it clawed its money back. And all the talents there behind the camera, it just didn't work, I guess. They didn't find the audience.
Some of it worked, some of it didn't. Overall, meh.
I think it's just like, in the end, people were like, who is this film for? So it shows, doesn't it? And I guess they were like, well, it could attract the people watching Stranger Things. It's a kind of guaranteed success. Like I said, at best, it got its money back. It broke even. That was it.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much that. Have any of you seen this film? What did you think?
Yeah, was it good? Did you enjoy it?
How old were you when you saw this?
Yes, are you going to make us feel old? Because it came out 5 years ago now.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Time flies really fast.
Yep, don't like it.
No. And on that note, you've been listening to
Scary Sam.
Yes. And you are?
James.
And I am?
Sam.
Why are you answering for me? Anywho.
You can find us on social media at Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it, at Scary Sam Pod.
And then if you'd like to write us an email, you can contact us at scaringsandpod@gmail.com.
Yes. Rate and review us. Subscribe to us. It's greatly appreciated. And that's it.
Is it?
Yes. Oh. I was going to say the line, but...
Yes, I was about to.
Oh, okay.
Stay safe out there tonight.
No, people just heard...
Stay...
safe.
Out.
There.
Tonight!
You have more energy than me.
Right now?
Yes.
In a few minutes, I might have a nap.
Okay.
Okay.